بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. Dear brothers and sisters, سلام عليكم ورحمة الله. Welcome to this new course, and inshallah we would like to go through a very important text by Ibn Arabi, one of the earlier mystics of Islam. And he has a very concise text which has been translated into English, and it's called Ibn Arabi, Unveiling the Secret of the Most Beautiful Names, Kashful Ma'na and Sirra Asma'illah al-Husna. And this has been translated, and it's readily available online. However, the translation seems to be problematic at times. So although this may be of help and assistance to those who want to follow through these lectures, I have provided my own paraphrased translation to make it more easier to understand. Now, in this concise text, which we want to, inshallah, provide a commentary to, Ibn Arabi goes through 100 names, and he starts with Allah, and then the second name he writes about is Ar-Rahman. Since the section on the name of Allah is rather heavy and difficult to digest, we shall start with the second name, and that is Ar-Rahman. And the translation, inshallah, will be provided. You should have it at your disposal. And as I say, the translation is a paraphrase translation, which I've made up myself. So there may be errors, but I feel it's much more easier to digest than the translation that the brothers from Karzai Publications have offered. Okay, so let's start with the name Ar-Rahman. And Ibn Arabi, with every name, he divides it into three parts. He analyzes each name in three different ways. The first is that of connection. How does a servant of Allah, what is the manner in which, or why does he need, why is he dependent upon, clinging upon this particular name? What is it that the servant of Allah is in need of for him or her to cling upon this name? That's the first. So it's a question of need and dependency. Whilst it's true to say that the essence of Allah is one, and every name of Allah is referring to that same essence, but that essence manifests in different ways, and the manner in which it manifests, these different names are allocated and given. Otherwise, with every name, it's in relation to the same essence. It's like, for example, if my name is Farooq, I may be a driver, a student, and a footballer. These different names are still, they're all manifestations of the same essence. It's the same me. But when that me is looked upon in a particular dimension of attribute, then a particular name arises. So me, qua playing football, the name would be footballer. Me, qua driving, the name would be driver. Me, qua studying, the name would be student. But driver and student and footballer, they're all manifestations of the same essence, me. So the first aspect to each name in this tripartite classification that each name possesses is that of Ibn Arabi, starts with connection. After that, he enters the discussion of realization, the realization of this name of Allah. And this means, what is the definition? What is the understanding of this attribute? So that the second part is more in relation to how one defines and understands this attribute, this name rather, of Allah. And finally, he discusses the aspect of incorporation. And this is a very practical step. The other two are more theoretical. But this third aspect to every name of Allah, which the author discusses, is in relation to how the servant actually and practically can incorporate this name of Allah and thus be Allah-like and thus be in proximity with Allah. But there's a protocol on how to incorporate these names of Allah. And Ibn Arabi discusses that too. And that is of relevance in the domain of practice. Okay. Now, some people may say, why does Ibn Arabi first discuss connection before definition and realization? Why doesn't he start with realization and definition before connection? Well, sometimes, although it's a good argument, and maybe that also would have some wisdom behind it, but maybe first the servant of Allah is in need before even understanding a given name of Allah. The servant of Allah does appreciate he's dependent in a particular area. He's in need in relation to a particular name of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. He does feel that need. The seeking is there before the gaining and attaining to the realization of the name. And finally, the third aspect is how to incorporate it in practical terms. Okay, let's start with Ar-Rahman. And here, connection. Ibn Arabi writes, "Your dependency and need towards this name, Ar-Rahman, concerns connecting to a name whose acquisition has been hidden by the realm of creation, but not by the realm of immutability." So he starts with this, and that's all he says in relation to the connection of this name. He says that your need and your dependency towards this name, Ar-Rahman, concerns connecting to a name whose acquisition, acquiring that name, has been hidden from you, has been concealed from you. By who? By the realm of creation, not by the realm of immutability. Okay, let's now try and explain and give a commentary to this. Here, the interesting area of analysis in this particular name is that rather than looking at this name as an adjective, Ibn Arabi is looking at it as a proper noun. And this is very important, because with all the names of Allah, the descriptions and the adjective is born in mind. And the meaning of those adjectives and descriptions is what we encounter and what we understand. But with Ar-Rahman, it's not just an adjective, although it's used as an adjective, and there's no problem in that. But the dimension that Ibn Arabi wants to focus upon is Ar-Rahman seen as a proper noun. Proper nouns are such as John, Peter, Farouk. These are proper nouns, or like New York or Tehran, and so on and so forth. Here, Ibn Arabi is saying Ar-Rahman is a proper noun. The reason I explained this at the start is because of the manner which he is describing this connection. He's saying connecting to Ar-Rahman is hidden from the servant by means of the realm of creation. Now, the servant isn't hidden from the adjectival meaning of Ar-Rahman. So what is he hidden from? What is it hidden from? And that is Ar-Rahman seen as a proper noun. Then the question is, okay, so if Ar-Rahman is a proper noun, what is it indicative of? And as we shall go through the text, it will become evident that it's indicative of the holy essence of Allah. That same reality that Allah is indicative of. And by the holy essence, I mean pure existence. I don't want to go through Tawheed and explaining Tawheed, because I'm assuming most of you are acquainted with my lectures, and I've discussed this in many, many lectures, and it's readily available online. The point is, Ar-Rahman as a proper noun is like John or Peter. If I point to a person and say, this is John. John is a proper noun. And it's referring to that physical existence of a person, 1.70 meters, this many kilograms in weight, and so on and so forth. When we say Ar-Rahman is a proper noun, then someone says, okay, what is it indicating? What is it in reference to? You say pure existence. So that is something important, because it doesn't apply with the other names of Allah. Although Ar-Rahman in the Quran has been used as an adjective, it has also been used as a proper noun. And in this book, when Ibn Arabi discusses Ar-Rahman, his whole focus is looking at Ar-Rahman as a proper noun. And the mysticism that comes forth from this reality is what he wants to demonstrate. Okay. Now, here, all blessings, all existing beings, all things come from this name, Ar-Rahman. And this name is indicating the first emanation of pure existence. In other words, Ar-Rahman is referring to the reality of the grantor of existence. So whatever existing thing exists, it has to be good in and of itself. All blessings, all things that exist are blessings. And all these blessings have been brought into existence. The grantor of existence is Ar-Rahman. So Ar-Rahman is looking at pure existence from the angle of the grantor of existence. So whatever is, has been brought into existence by the grantor of existence. And this is what we are referring to when we say Ar-Rahman. This is what the proper noun is referring to. And even when you look at the term Ar-Rahman adjectivally as the most merciful, that mercy has to be explained in these terms, as mercy being existence. And he, to all things, universally, grants them mercy, grants them existence. So the next question is, as Ibn Arabi said, whose acquisition has been hidden by the realm of creation, here the question is, why have we become blind to this connection? Why have we been blinded to this name, Ar-Rahman, as the granter of existence? Why have we become blinded to it, desensitized to it? And that by the realm of creation, not by the realm of immutability. We'll explain that later. Why have we become ignorant in relation to the fact? These are explanatory notes. When I read the actual text, I will mention that this is the text, but these are just notes to facilitate our understanding. So why have we become ignorant in relation to the fact that we are wholly dependent upon Ar-Rahman? After all that we have, including ourselves, is from Ar-Rahman, has been brought into existence by Ar-Rahman. So why have we become blinded? The answer is because of the love of the dunya, the love of excessive desires. Although by dunya, I don't mean the physical existing things. It's the false attributings that one does that makes one create one's own dunya. But this creation is a creation within oneself. Otherwise, whatever exists in this physical realm of creation is good, is a blessing of Allah. But we're blinded because we make these attributings, we attribute things to ourselves. And this is because of our ego. For example, my house, my car, my child, my certificate, my knowledge, my job, and so on and so forth. All these things exist in the physical realm, but when you attribute it to yourself, that is the dunya. But it doesn't exist outside you. It lies within. And this point is important, that we are drowned in our imaginary dunya, in our imaginary world. But this world is within. This blinds us to the reality that whatever we have is from Allah, is from Ar-Rahman. He is the granter of existence. But the way we attribute things to ourselves, thus creating the inner dunya within, that blinds us from seeing this reality, that it's all from Ar-Rahman, the granter of existence. Now, these excessive desires that we have and the love of the dunya that we have, these things have made us preoccupied and thus oblivious to all blessings, and therefore oblivious to Ar-Rahman, and thus oblivious to the fact that Allah is granting everything their existence. Because when you attribute things to yourself, you're compromising your understanding of Ar-Rahman. Now, this inner dunya that we're creating is a result of how we see the external world, how we see one's children, one's house, one, the sun, the moon, everything in our surroundings, how we see it, how we see the external world, makes us create this pseudo dunya within. And this dunya is the abode of obliviousness, ghafla. Not exactly the external world, because that's all blessings from Allah. But the way you look at it and thus create your own dunya, it's all, this dunya, this inner dunya, is the abode of obliviousness. It's also called, well, the external world is also called the abode of ghurur, which means the abode of deception. And the reason for that is because it makes one, the servant, look at things in the external world and think that the thing that they're seeing in the external world is that thing alone, rather than seeing it as a manifestation of Allah's attributes, rather than seeing it as a gateway, as a conduit to Allah. They look at it in and of itself, be it the sun, the moon, the house, and then they start making these attributes, these pseudo, wrongfully made attributings to themselves. My this, my that, I did this, I did that. That emanates from a worldview which looks at the world and treats it as it is, as one sees it with the physical eye. And therefore, it's sometimes called the abode of deception. In chapter 29, verse 64, it reads, وَمَا هَذَهِ الْحَيَاةُ الدُّنْيَا إِلَّا لَحْوٌ وَاللَّعِبُ وَإِنَّ الدَّارَ الْآخِرَةَ لَهِيَ الْحَيَوَانُ لَوْ كَانُوا يَعْلَمُونَ. Here, this worldly life is nothing but a diversion and a game. Diversion is diversion from Allah. The game in Arabic is a series or sequence of events that is traced back to one's imaginative faculty. It's like when children play with toys and give names to the toys. It's all imagination. This worldly life is an imaginary world you're creating within. It's an imaginary world that you're living, and it's all within. Nothing to do with the external world. In chapter 30, verse 23, وَمِنْ آيَاتِهِ مَنَامُكُمْ بِاللَّيْلِ وَالنَّهَارِ. Amongst Allah's signs is your sleeping during the night and the day. بِاللَّيْلِ وَالنَّهَارِ. The ba preposition hasn't been repeated. It doesn't say bil-layl wa bin-nahar. And since the ba preposition isn't repeated, the same way that sleeping applies during the night, it applies during the day. And most people are sleeping, even during the day. What does sleeping mean? They're intoxicated, infatuated by the imaginary world that they've created for themselves. They're awake physically, but during the day, it's all about my job, my money, my prestige, my honor, my children, my house. And all this is just a game, because none of it is yours. It's all pertaining to Ar-Rahman, the grantor of existence. Nothing is yours. And so, being drowned and preoccupied with this imaginary world blinds you. And the cause is the realm of creation, but your worldview has blinded you from this name of Ar-Rahman, the grantor of existence. This imaginary world of yours, has blinded you to see that everything is from Ar-Rahman. But you don't make that connection. You see the world and you see it as it is, period. And that blinds you. And then in chapter 29, verse 64, it then continues, says, وَإِنَّ الدَّارَ الْآخِرَةَ, but the abode of the hereafter, which is an immaterial realm. It's a realm of immutability. It's not a realm of contingency. In that realm, where nothing changes, nothing is limited, in the realm of immutability, or in the abode of the hereafter, لَهِيَ الْحَيَوَانِ, that is the true life. See, that is the true life. Seeing how the immaterial manifestations of Allah actualize, and seeing that reality, being preoccupied with that reality, enables one to see Ar-Rahman. But if you only see the realm of creation, the realm of contingency, and limit it to that, and you limit it because of your love towards it, and its glitter, and its desires, and its pleasures, you would be desensitizing yourself to understanding or wanting to connect to Ar-Rahman. True life is when you see everything emanating from Ar-Rahman. True life is when you see it's all Ar-Rahman in action. But we are hidden from this. We've been concealed from this reality, and that's because of the realm of creation. So real life is where there is attentiveness to Ar-Rahman. In relation to everything, you connect it to Ar-Rahman rather than to yourself. You see all blessings from him. But to do this, it requires one to eliminate traces of the worldly life within. And that is a process, and it starts with having a Tawheedi worldview and then incorporating Tawheed within one's heart. As we progress, inshallah, this will become more apparent. In another verse, chapter 50, verse 22, لَقَدْ كُنْتَ فِي غَفْلَةٍ مِّنْ هَذَا فَكَشَفْنَا عَنْكَ غِطَاءَكَ فَبَصَرُكَ الْيَوْمَ حَدِيدٌ. So it will be said, you were certainly inattentive, unaware, or oblivious of this, and we have removed from you your cover, so your sight this day is now acute, sharp. You were unaware and oblivious that everything around you were manifestations of Ar-Rahman. You were oblivious to this. And as a result of this obliviousness, you attributed things to yourself rather than seeing everything from Allah. Not only an academic seeing, but a seeing of the heart, an attentiveness of the heart in relation to the fact that it's all from Ar-Rahman. Ar-Rahman is the grantor of existence. He is the all-merciful, universally merciful, universally granting his mercy to whatever is, i.e. granting existence to whatever is. And then after passing away, after dying a physical death, only then your eyes will see, will become sharp. But it's too late now. The objective was to see whilst in this realm of creation, to not be blinded by this realm of creation. But after physical death, when you transcend to a higher realm, it's too late then. It'll be of no benefit, such seeing. In another verse in the Holy Quran, chapter 24, verse 39, وَالَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا, concerning those who disbelieve, أَعْمَالُهُمْ كَسَرَابٍ بِقِيعَةٍ, their deeds are like a mirage in a low land. In relation to those who disbelieve, now disbelief has degrees. It's not only disbelief in the canonical sense, in the Sharia sense. One may be a Muslim, but in action of and heart-wise, they disbelieve many truths that they declare academically. But in the realm of action, in the realm of their spirits, they're disbelievers. But being a disbeliever in a tariqah sense, it's not haram in the Sharia sense. So we shouldn't place all disbelievers in one basket, so to speak. We shouldn't regard them all as belonging to one category. But these people, their actions are like a mirage in a low land. يَحْسَبُهُ أَدَّمْعَانُ مَاءَ, the thirsty person thinks it's water. It's a mirage. And the thirsty person who is lacking sees it as water. حَتَّى إِذَا جَاءَهُ لَمْ يَجِدْهُ شَيْئًا, until when he comes to that area in the desert, for example, or the lowland, here he finds nothing there. He goes there, but there's no water. وَوَجَدَ اللَّهُ عِنْدَ. Now from here, we started with a simile, the actions of a disbeliever being like a mirage. And now we're going and entering what this simile is representing. That once the disbeliever then enters the hereafter and sees the reality of their actions, they will see it that their actions were useless. They thought they committed a lot of actions, but it was all in vain. And there in the hereafter, وَوَجَدَ اللَّهُ عِنْدَ, there they will perceive Allah, they'll find Allah before him. And Allah will pay him in full his due. وَوَفَّاهُ حِسَابًا. So there they will see before themselves that it's all Allah. We thought and made attributed things in this world to ourselves. And we thought we were somebody. And we thought that these actions we did, we attributed to ourselves. And we thought that we committed those actions. And these things belong to us. But all this was that inner dunya. It was all imagination. And that's why when they enter the hereafter, and when the hereafter appears before them, after physical death, they see they have nothing. Everything they did, it was just pure imagination. Like someone dreaming of having a car and a house and a job and honor amongst the people, but after waking up, they see that none of this exists. There's nothing here. The same applies to the disbeliever, but it's too late then. Hence, we are in need of Allah's Rahmaniyya because of being so hidden, and we want to come out of this concealment. We're so veiled from Allah's Rahmaniyya. And seeing this Rahmaniyya, we're so veiled, we cling upon this name so that we acquire it and come out of this veil. Right now we're on application of chapter 30, verse 7. يَعْلَمُونَ ظَاهِرًا مِنَ الْحَيَاةِ الدُّنْيَا. They know the outer aspect of the worldly life. They know the external dimensions of it. However, وَهُمْ عَنِ الْآخِرَةِ هُمْ غَافِلُونَ. But in relation to the akhirah, which is the inner aspect of what the worldly life is. Remember we said you shouldn't look at things in and of themselves. You have to use them as a conduit. They're a manifestation of Allah. They've been granted to you by Allah, by Ar-Rahman. But in relation to Akhirah and seeing this reality, seeing true life, Lahiyal Hayawan, in chapter 29, that we are veiled from. And here in this verse, it says, you're oblivious in relation to Akhirah. Now, Akhirah has been used in opposition to Zahira min al-hayati dunya. But we are oblivious to it. And because of this, this veiling of the realm of creation upon us, we want to cling to Allah, call this name Ar-Rahman, so that we come out of it. We appreciate that we're so blinded to the fact that He is the grantor of existence. We appreciate this academically. We feel it, that we're blinded to it. We're inattentive to Allah's Rahmaniyya. The realm of creation has veiled us from this reality. Okay. Then we enter the realization aspect. And that reads, Ar-Rahman, Ibn Arabi writes, Ar-Rahman, like all proper nouns, such as Allah, because Allah is a proper noun too, like all proper nouns, can't be used as an adjective, but can be used as a subject to be described. I.e., it's not a descriptor describing something, it's not an adjective, but it is a described. It's a subject which can be described. When you look at Ar-Rahman as a proper noun, you can't use it as an adjective for another noun, but you can use it as a noun to be described by other adjectives. Now, this has a lot of important relevance to this discussion which Ibn Arabi wants to open up, and inshallah we'll continue with the realization part in the next session. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammad wa alihi at-tahirin.